This episode of the CBS This Morning podcast is brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
I'm Charlie Rose.
I'm Nora O'Donnell.
And I'm Gail King. Hey, this is the CBS This Morning podcast.
Welcome to the CBS This Morning podcast. My name is Vladimir Dutier. I'm a CBS News correspondent and anchor, and I'm very pleased today to have the CBS This Morning weather producer, David Parkinson, here with me. David, what's up?
Glad to be here. Glad that we're in a slight lull in the hurricane season.
We are in a lull, and it's a beautiful day in New York City, but in the rest of the southwest, southeast of the United States, it's been kind of rough. I think we wanted to have you on today because for a lot of people who have seen the hurricane season of 2017, there's a lot of people who have looked at the devastation that the hurricanes have caused over the last month or so, and they've just started to scratch their heads and say, you know, what's going on, man? I mean, it feels as if not only are there more hurricanes, the hurricanes that are coming are making landfall are absolutely devastating, and we've never seen stuff like this. I mean, some of the, you know, the reports leading up to the most recent hurricanes like Irma and Maria and Jose, you know, Irma specifically was, you know, this was a historic hurricane. This was a once in a lifetime hurricane, a once in a 500 year event hurricane. And so we wanted to get you here to talk a little bit about the science, help us to cut through the hyperbole that exist out there, because I think every year people say this is the worst hurricane season, and I'm sure we're going to have you back here in about 4 months when it starts snowing in Maine and we say, why is it snowing in Maine? But for now, let's talk a little bit about the storms that we've seen this season. Are we seeing more storms this season, or are we just hearing about them and clearly seeing the devastation that is up front and center for a lot of people who watch television?
Well, so we've been in a bit of a drought in terms of hurricanes in at least recent history. So we had 2005, which was the absolute gangbusters year where we ran out of letters and names for the storms and we went into the Greek alphabet, which never happened before. And then after that, we cut down on the amount of years where we had landfalling hurricanes in the United States. So it wasn't until we had Matthew last year, and then again with this year, that we started to have landfalling hurricanes again. And so there was that collective period of about 10 years where there was a lull to a drought, depending on the term you want to use. And based upon that, people sort of forgot that it's not uncommon to have a landfall or two or three in the United States. What was incredibly rare about this year and continues to be rare is the intensity. So a Category 4 landfall for Harvey. We had a Category 4 landfall in Puerto Rico, a very strong Category 4 landfall in Puerto Rico with Maria. And then, of course, we had Irma as a 5. And so the problem is these are not trivial hurricanes. Look, no hurricane is trivial, but these are major hurricanes that are pretty much maxing out the scale. And you've had them taking this path of destruction from out by the Cape Verde Islands and just continue. It is very rare. What was particularly rare about Irma is the storm does not usually form that far out and then impact the U.S. mainland. Usually it's ones that form closer to the Antilles that we really have to worry about. So that storm had a lot of time to gain strength, and then it just stayed there. It stayed a storm with 175 mile an hour winds longer than any other storm. It covered a period of places in the Caribbean where it just grazed Puerto Rico, but really just absolutely hammered parts of the British Virgin Islands, parts of Barbuda and those things. So they hit at peak intensity. And that was the other thing that was interesting about Harvey, is Harvey made landfall as a 4 at the end of an eyewall replacement cycle. It was as strong as it could get in that cycle. It wasn't weakening. And so usually you have a storm that as it approaches land will weaken a little bit. And that wasn't the case with Harvey. So it hit it with the full force. It hit Puerto Rico with not quite the full force of the storm, but pretty darn close. In the case of Maria and in the case of Irma, it hit those Caribbean islands with absolute full force. And so it's a rare feat for them to be so close together and so strong, but it is not necessarily uncommon to have a landfall or a couple of landfalls in a year.
So Scott Pelley had a fascinating piece on the season premiere, the 50th season of 60 Minutes, and he interviewed a scientist who suggested that the reason we've seen these storms as powerful as we've seen them recently is, A, there is the waters off the coast of Florida and Texas are warmer. And because of that, that's providing devastating energy to the hurricanes, which is how hurricanes, as I understand it, work anyway, but they are warmer than usual. And because of that, water evaporates a lot more, which means more moisture within these storms. And then because of that enormous moisture, you have the threat of storm surge, which is what we've been seeing in Texas and in Florida and, of course, now in Puerto Rico. What do you make of that? And is that atypical or is that normal?
So it's a little bit difficult to go at least this close to the storm to say, hey, was this climate change? Wasn't that? Because that's immediately what people want to jump to. And there is a very long and detailed attribution science that takes a while to get all of the data. What we know with regard to Harvey, Harvey was a couple of interesting things. The water wasn't particularly warm in the case of Harvey. There are these little warm eddies that move around the Gulf. We're still trying to figure out how exactly and why exactly they move where they do. But it's something that in 2005, a couple of the storms hit warm eddies there and rapidly intensified. So that was the case of that. That being said, the amount of moisture that can be held on to is absolutely a true thing. The warmer it is, the more moisture that can be held on to by the clouds and eventually has to get wrung out of them, so to speak. So you're going to be seeing these heavier rain totals. One of the things we are very confident with climate science is that warmer temperatures and greater rainfall totals are very connected to climate change. With regard to intensity, one of the reasons why these storms have been so intense is a lack of something called shear. And shear is winds at different levels of the atmosphere that will go in a different direction. And so basically they start tearing the storm apart. So basically the top of the storm will have winds blowing, you know, out of the west, let's say, and the bottom of the storm will have things blowing out of the south. And so essentially what will happen is the storm will lose its proper formation and it will get less strong. Hmm. And we didn't have that this year. We've had pretty much record low shear. And so that's why none of these storms have fallen apart as they've approached land. And so we're still trying to figure out exactly why there's that lack of shear. But one of the interesting things that we do know is when you look back at Sandy, when you look at Harvey, when you look at some of these storms that have taken, let's say, atypical courses, we know that part of that is with the upper levels of the atmosphere, with high pressure systems and with jet streams that are sort of moving in different ways. And so in the case of Sandy, you had a high that was essentially, it's called an omega block. It's basically set up over Greenland and it forced the storm in. And we know that that high is stronger than it would have been in all likelihood because of climate change. And so it's not that the storm necessarily was stronger, but part of what was guiding it was stronger. And so, again, it may be splitting hairs, but that's the kind of thing that we have to take a look at is what parts of what storm were impacted by it and which are just typical. I mean, remember, we had strong hurricanes. We had a Category 5 in the case of Andrew in 92. We had them in the 60s and the 40s, you know, the Long Island Express hurricane in 1938. Strong hurricanes happen. It's just the question of what's guiding them, how frequently are they occurring, and what are going to be some of their primary effects. So it's still very much an open question, and that is not settled. But we do know that events, big events like these, you know, big snowstorms, big hurricanes, things like that, are more likely to occur when you have a warmer climate.
All right. So can we then extrapolate from that, in fact, even if we can't say that it's climate change in an absolute manner, that we can suggest that because the storms are more intense than they have perhaps been recently, that and the population in some of these areas has swelled to a greater degree, that, for example, what we've seen on Puerto Rico is an island, right, as the president has been saying all week, and yet they seemed completely not unprepared, but the structures, the infrastructure of that island seemed to not be able to withstand the full force of Hurricane Maria, even though you would expect, having been a tropical island, you know, and people having inhabited that island for many, many years, that they would be. But because perhaps there's more hotels, there's more people, that it's harder to withstand the full force of these hurricanes.
I mean, Puerto Rico not getting hit by a major hurricane for as long as it had in a period of almost 100 years, I can't chalk it up to anything other than luck, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were overdue. You know, partially it's a small island in a big ocean, so you've got enough sort of different paths that you can dodge enough bullets, but eventually it's going to come knocking. The problem in Puerto Rico is you have a lot of your infrastructure above ground. They don't bury things in the way that we do in some parts of the United States. So that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is we're almost sort of a victim of our own success. We knew this storm was headed for Puerto Rico about 4 days in advance. It was almost dead on forecast-wise. And people did what they were supposed to do. And remember, in the last storm, almost 100 years ago, thousands of people died. And thousands of people thus far have not died. That number was limited to double digits and low double digits at that. I think it's somewhere in the teens. And so that's a function of, look, we were really good at getting the message out that you needed to move to a stronger place, that you needed to get away from the coast. And a lot of people survived the storms because they took the warnings and listened to them. The problem is we are now in every part of the country pretty much woefully underprepared for the cleanup. And that's really the big problem is we can warn you ahead of time and we can save your life for the immediate impacts. But thinking about the downline implications of it and thinking about how you're going to start planning recovery efforts, how you're going to make your electrical grid, how you're going to make your housing stock resilient, that's a whole urban planning situation that is totally divorced from the weather side, but really needs to be looked at. I mean, the real question in the Houston area, right, is why are you built in all the, you know, you built things behind a dam. Surprise, it flooded. Like there, right. there are some questionable land use choices that we have to, as a society, take a look at. What we do here in the weather profession is we can give you a heads up when we know something's coming. But you need to take a look at long-term trends and realize, should we really be building this? How should we be building this? And I think that you'll see in Southeast Florida, in Miami, after Andrew, the building codes went way up, and all of those houses are significantly better built than they were 25 years ago. And Western Florida didn't have that same interaction with Andrew, so they don't have quite the same codes. And so that's a perfect example of, as soon as you're impacted, you start thinking about what you need to do for the future, but the time to have those conversations is before you're impacted. And as a country, we're not very good at that.
That's a very good point. And certainly our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Puerto Rico. They are in dire straits right now. And, you know, the people in Texas and in Florida are just starting to sort of dig out and go through their belongings. And I've seen some of the images there, and it's really, really sad. But hopefully they get the help that they need. Let's switch gears slightly and just talk about some sort of fun, nerdy stuff. We've been talking about nerdy stuff because weather is for people who are really into weather. But let's talk about, for example, how hurricanes get named. I think a lot of people out there are probably wondering. You mentioned something at the very top of this podcast. You said that back in 2005, we ran out of names of hurricanes, but I don't recall Vladimir, Hurricane Vladimir, or maybe there was a hurricane that began with a letter V, but how come my name never gets used as a hurricane?
Right. So the way that it happens is the names alternate between male and female, and there's a list for every 6 years. So the list in 2005 is the same list we have right now. The reason why there wasn't a Katrina this year, the reason why there won't be a Wilma this year, is because they retire storm names once there's been enough impacted with that. So there will never be
an Andrew.
Right. There'll never be another Andrew. I'm confident they'll retire Harvey. I'm confident they'll retire Irma. I'm confident they'll retire Maria. And there will probably be more from this year. I mean, this was a very devastating year in terms of hurricanes. But if the impact was small, like Lee, which is a powerful hurricane, but it's just out over the fishes doing nothing, that name will come about in 6 more years.
Got it.
So,
and these names are randomly chosen names?
So they're chosen by the part of the world where you're in. So because we are in the Atlantic basin that has English Spanish and French speaking countries. That's the list that they pull from.
That's interesting.
And then you'll have appropriate names as you look into the Western Pacific that are different. You know, they want them to be organic to the area where the storms are impacting.
And because a hurricane is a typhoon in Asia, right? I covered the typhoon in the Philippines a couple of years ago.
There was Haiyan, there was Tip, there's, you know, all of those ones that were crazy strong. I mean, the interesting thing was is that up until this year, Haiyan and Tip sort of had the records for strongest, longest, and all those kinds of things. And Irma started to encroach on some of those records. But usually it is the Pacific that has the strongest because it's a longer body of water. There's warmer water there, et cetera, et cetera. So essentially those names there are separate from the Indian Ocean names. They're separate from the Eastern Pacific names, which then go into the Central Pacific and then go into the Western. The Pacific is actually divided into sort of three hurricane warning areas and two east-west naming conventions there. So it really depends totally what part of the world you're in and at what point.
Before we wrap, I want to ask you about something that we haven't heard a lot about over the last couple of years as people have begun wondering about climate change and what effect that has on storms. El Nino, which every time I hear that name, I will always remember the late, great Chris Farley on Saturday Night Live, you know, saying, "I am El Nino," and, you know, standing in the middle of a storm. And help our listeners understand who is or what is El Nino and why haven't we been hearing a lot about
him? I believe El Nino translated means the Nino.
The Nino.
Yes. so it's interesting. We are entering a La Nina pattern. And what that means is the water temperature in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Peru and Ecuador is either going to be warmer or colder than normal. If it's warmer than normal, it's an El Nino. If it's colder than normal, it's a La Nina. And you have to have an elongated, there's different areas. There's like a Nino 3-4, a Nino 1-2. There's a whole lot of
Ninos.
Right. There's a lot of Ninos there. But essentially what happens is if it is beneath half a degree Celsius or a degree Celsius or a degree and a half, depending on the intensity, you either have a weak, a strong, or a moderate El or La Nino. And a lot of that, in terms of El Ninos, Californians know all about it because that impacts a lot of their rainy season. But there's not this like automatic corollary. And this is the interesting thing is everyone's like, oh, El Nino, that means it's going to dump rain in California and snow in the Sierra. It doesn't always mean that. Whether it's weak or strong has an impact. Individual years have an impact. So it's this very interesting sort of probability dance. As we get into what it means for the hurricane basin, and El Nino generally correlates with less storms, and a La Nina usually correlates with some more storms, but it's not quite a one-to-one comparison there. But part of the thought of why we had less storms over the last couple of years is because we had an El Nino, and that was suppressing some of it. Because whether everybody wants to admit it or not, all of the oceans are connected, all of the world is connected, and the climate is connected. And so even though you have this finger of cold or warm water that's stretching off the South American coast, it impacts patterns in the Atlantic and impacts patterns all throughout the globe.
All right. This was really fascinating, very interesting. I think for a lot of people who may be wondering about the level of storm activity that we've seen over the last couple of months. I know that hurricane season ends in November, but I mean, generally I feel like by this point, by October, I remember Matthew a couple of years ago came in October, but we start to see, I mean, could we be kind of done?
So the middle of the season is September 10th. It goes to November 30th. It's important to remember that Sandy happened in October. You know, the big ones happen, but the area where they form changes. So we're used to these Atlantic hurricanes starting out in the Cape Verde Islands. It now generally starts to generate somewhere closer to the Caribbean Sea. You see a lot more Western Caribbean hurricanes in the back half of the year. But fortunately, we've got a little bit of a lull for the next, let's say, week and a half. And then,
is that it?
You know, it's good. Like, we can slightly reset our coverage schedules here.
Yes, people can, you know, take a day or two off.
What a lot of people, you know, the interesting thing is when you look at what people face in these hurricanes, You can never complain working in the news industry with your hours or what you've had to do, because you look at people who've lost everything.
Yeah.
And you look at, you know, what David Begno's been going for pretty much 2 weeks straight, and what he has to deal with is nothing compared with the people of Puerto Rico. So, you know, you don't never want to make light with you know, how busy we've been and all of that kind of stuff. But as we move into the middle of October, there's a chance again for some more tropical genesis. We just hope that people will continue to the biggest key is just keep looking at the forecast. What the Hurricane Center does in terms of their forecasts are remarkably accurate. What we do in terms of trying to boil down all of the different models we have at our disposal and give you a realistic look at the impacts, it is light years ahead of where it used to be, and it is going to continue to get better. Mm. But more importantly, don't let your guard down, and keep the folks of Puerto Rico and obviously of Florida and Texas in your thoughts, because it is going to be a very long rebuilding process, and we just hope that they all get through this season without storms.
That's exactly what I was going to say. We hope that this is it for them, because as you point out, it's difficult for news organizations to cover these hurricanes and storms, but everybody has to live there. I mean, last season when I left Haiti, I realized that even though things had started to get better, there were a whole host of problems that they were going to be dealing with post hurricane: cholera, disease, starvation, rebuilding of their homes, and when you know that, and you know that you're getting to leave and come back to the comfort of your home in here in New York City or anywhere else, it does give you pause. And as you say, our thoughts and our prayers are with everybody who's been affected by these storms, not only the storms that have passed, but the ones hopefully that don't come, but you never know. David Parkinson, CBS This Morning weather producer, it's really been great talking to you. Thank you so much for breaking it down for us. We really appreciate it. You can always send us questions and drop us social media tweets at the CBS This Morning Twitter handle, or go to the CBS This Morning Facebook page. My name is Vladimir Jutia. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you the next time on the CBS This Morning podcast.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.
For more information, please visit cbsthismorning.com.